Hi, Tara. It's great to hear you and have you live on the diabetes chat. Tom's, you know, he's done such a great job of getting people like yourself to talk about diabetes and how it affects you and your family. And there's just some stuff I'd like to just sort of go through. You know, we welcome Tara. Tara's a mum to three children, and her middle daughter lives with a long-term kidney condition, and her youngest daughter has type 1 diabetes. Tara's passionate about helping people and giving them the tools, time, and support to develop their ideas and bring them to fruition. Tara's also a blogger, podcaster, and is an ultramarathoner, as well as a passionate mum and advocate of diabetes. Tonight on Diabetes Chat, we will be chatting to Tara about her daughter's diagnosis of type 1 diabetes, the parenting perspective of supporting someone with type 1 diabetes, and the transition from primary to secondary school. And we'll chat about stigma and advocacy work.
So welcome, Tara.
Can I just say that as the loveliest introduction? Thank you so much.
Oh, bless you.
Bless you. It's Tom's quite good with words, aren't you, mate? I mean, I'm just reading it, Tara, and right. Everyone, but that's, no, honestly.
Thank you.
So what we're going to do, we're going to do some quick fire questions that Rich is going to chat about with you. And then we're going to talk a little bit about your background and your career and a bit about mental health. And then I'll talk a little bit with you about Talia's journey with diabetes when she was diagnosed. And then we'll talk about the transition in schools. And then Rich has some questions on mental health and peer support and stigmas and a few other little questions as well. So I am going to go stick on the kettle because Rich has put his request in.
Bless you, Tom.
I'm going to leave you in good company with Rich, and he's going to go through some quick questions to get us going. All right.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Thank you, Tara. Yeah. Question, basically, could you tell me your name and your name and occupation? If that's all right.
Yep. So my name is Tara Humphrey. I run my own business. I'm a healthcare manager. I've got a healthcare management company.
Cool. That's brilliant. Fantastic. Have you been in that job long? Been in a few years kind of thing?
Yeah. I celebrate my 9th year anniversary on my birthday, which is the 17th of March. So yeah, we're still
That's incredible.
Alive and kicking. Yeah.
That's fantastic. It's so important to be able to help people with. I mean, it's classed as, I know it's classed as a chronic illness, but you know, reading between the lines, helping people is such a real time great thing to do. You know, I mean, I know when I was diabetic, I got diagnosed at 14, secondary school, and no one knew. There was two people in the school with diabetes, and that was about it, really. You were sort of classed as like alienated, really. There was no teachers really knew anything about it. You know, they were kind of understanding to a certain degree, you know, if you had to go out of class and either go to the loo or go and get a drink or whatever. But nowadays, hopefully, it'll be a lot better. Right, question two. If you were diabetic, Tara, what would be your go-to hypo treatment?
Oh, gosh.
That's an unusual question.
Do you know what? I think I would choose jelly babies.
That is probably babies. one of the favourites for everyone, I guess.
Yeah.
That's quite good. That's popular. That's quite a popular choice, actually. Jelly babies. They're good in summer as well. They don't sort of go all manky, do they? Like some like if you've got something else in your pocket or whatever, it doesn't. They don't like degenerate kind of thing if you've got them in a pack or what have you, do they?
Do you know what? This is making me think. Talia has glucotabs and, you know, the shots.
Yes.
So maybe and every time she has a shot, like her face, like makes a funny face.
Bless her.
So yeah. Maybe I should just switch her over to jelly babies, actually. But the shots work quicker, I must admit, for her.
Yeah, liquid's usually quicker. Yeah. But I know that those lift shots you use.
Yeah,
they're really good, aren't they? I think you can get them on prescription. I'm not 100% sure. Don't quote me on that.
I think you can. No, I think you can, but we don't. But we should. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Right. If you had the choice of an insulin pen or an insulin pump, what would you use?
Pump.
Yeah, pump. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Has Tolly been on a pump for a while, kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's been on a pump and she's been on hybrid closed loop coming up to about 5 months.
Oh, wow. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but I see the pros and cons.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I mean, it's such a funny thing to think of, but yeah, I think I would choose the pump definitely.
I think with the you know, the future looking like hybrid closed loop is going to be coming to fruition for a lot of people. I mean,
yeah,
probably everyone that qualifies. I mean, I know there's certain criteria to meet and what have you, but I know all children under the age of 16, I think, are able to have hybrid closed loop if they want that. And I just use DIY closed loop Android APS, okay, and I've used it since 2019, and I'm not joking, it's life-changing. It's got your back. It's really, you know, although it's not a licensed method, I mean, I can't sort of give advice, but it's just, you know, the diabetes advert, you've got a balloon, you have to keep it up.
When you're
running a sort of a hybrid closed loop or, you know, a DIY platform, it's basically the balloon's got helium in it, so it's basically got your back all the time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Right, next question. From your point of view, what do you think is the worst, feeling hypo or hyper? So kind of relating to Talia, you know, is it, do you think hypo's worse or hyper?
I think hypo is worse for Tali. I think it really affects her mood change, her attitude change, her cognitive ability changes.
Yes.
So I would say, yeah, she springs back quite well, depending on how low she goes, but she can spring back quite quickly, but she's still not quite on it. Whereas when she's high, she can be high for quite a long time. And I'm like, are you okay? She's like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm like, are you sure? It doesn't seem to affect her.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. I mean, that's a great, I mean, I think hypo's, I mean, it can come on quite quickly as well, can't it? Whereas hyper, I mean, if you're on a pump and you get a failed Kennedy, hyper can come on quite relatively quick, but hypo's more frightening and a bit worse kind of thing. And I can relate to that.
Yeah.
What's the one thing you like about diabetes and the one thing you don't like about diabetes?
I think that's an interesting question. I think this might sound strange, but I'd say the community is probably the thing that it makes it all feel a bit better. So I think, getting to meet people, we went to a diabetes camp not too long ago, and I felt like that was life-changing. Oh, it was fabulous. Brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant.
Was it a family one so that you guys got to go as well?
It was. Brilliant. It wasn't together type one. It was like type one together.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. It was so good, and I feel like I know Tali on a different level now.
Yes.
Oh, and we just had such fantastic talks about it, and was a bit like, when I say X, is that annoying? She was like, yeah. And I'm like, why didn't you say?
that's cool. That's really good.
So yeah, we're going to go, I think it's in Scotland. They alternate it between the England and Scotland. So we're going to go to Scotland. She just loved it. So I definitely think the community is like one of the best things that's come from this.
Yeah, I can relate to that big time. I guess everyone can that's listening. You know, it's people power, isn't it? You know, when you've got a problem, you can share it, and you can have someone who can just send you a message or a direct message and say, look, you know, you've got this kind of thing, and give you that support and give you that sort of shoulder to lean on kind of thing. And I think it's good that.
Yeah. I feel very lucky.
Right, that's cool. Could you tell us a little bit about your background and career and what your day-to-day life with work looks like? That's quite a big question.
So I'm based in Kent, in Whitstable. And essentially for my job, I've got a team of eight. We help groups of general practices, GP surgeries, work together to deliver their services, and they're called primary care networks. So people say, oh, every day is different. Every day isn't different. There are like themes. Today I've got an office, but today I work from home because Tali is not very well. So I definitely have the flexibility. But yes, last week I was in London twice. I travel quite a lot for work. Yeah. And yeah, just lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of meetings, lots of emails. But I honestly love it. And I fell into it. I never, ever thought, I didn't know I could work in primary care. It was a pure, right place at the right time.
Yes,
I used to work at a university and I had a group. I went to a meeting just by chance of a group of GPs and they were really young. And I was a bit like, what do you guys do? And I started helping them with a project. And then when I was looking to leave, they said, who's going to finish our operating plan? And I said, oh, well, I can. And they said, are you setting up your own business? You're going freelance. And I literally just went, oh, yeah. And I had no plans to. Then I went home. I asked my sister, like, how do you set up a business? And yeah, I've been in business ever since.
Wow. And you love it by the sound
of it. I love it. Incredible. Yeah. I love it.
Well done. That's a real good. That's amazing.
Yeah, I feel very, very lucky. Sometimes I think I'm a glutton for punishment because general practice is like it's quite tough, but I do like it.
Yeah. I mean, that goes on to this question. What do you love about your job the most and what challenges challenges do you face with it?
I mean, I do love the people. I love like the challenge. I love the challenge of going into a network where initially half of the people kind of don't want me there. They don't want me there.
Yes, yeah.
And I love being able, like towards the end or towards the middle, starting to win people over and starting to help them make the change. I love the challenge. And the most, I think the challenging aspect, and I love that I'm learning all the time.
Yeah,
you just all it's constant. It's like just being at school every day. It's like so you are learning, sometimes learning by mistakes, which can be quite hard. But I love that I know like a little about a lot of things now.
Yeah,
and I really enjoy that. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. That's really good.
I can't remember the other question. What did you say? Was it the hardest bit?
Yeah, what's the biggest challenge you face kind of thing?
Working
in primary care, the biggest challenge is winning people over that are able to give services and stuff kind of thing.
I think it is lots of competing priorities. That's the hardest bit. And I think from a clinical perspective, although I'm not clinical, but when I talk about, it sometimes feels like the conditions are in competition with each other, diabetes is important, cancer is important, frailty is important, just everything, CVD, just everything needs, everybody needs training, everything is a priority, but not everything is, you can't have like 50 priorities. That's the challenging part of it, the demand, patient demand, and the demand on everybody's time is so great, so trying to fight through that is probably the most challenging bit at the moment. They're like the GPs they're just burnt out.
I mean, I've visited briefly hospital with my daughter. I've got a 9 year old, well, she's been 9 next month, and it's really difficult when you've got a poorly daughter and you're waiting in A&E. You get to see the hospital staff, but you could see the load is absolutely huge on them, these emergency care centers and stuff. It's just like, oh, it's hard. It must be really hard to be able to manage that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But thank you for that. Next sort of question. You're a keen blogger and podcast host. Would you be kind enough to share a little bit about this with us, please?
Yeah. So the podcast started as a bit of a hobby, really. And when I did my dissertation, I asked some GPs a few questions, their views of the 5 year forward. Can you still hear me?
Yes, yeah.
Can you still hear me?
Yeah, we can still hear you. Oh, can you still hear us?
Can you still hear me?
I can hear Tara, yes.
Ooh, what happened now? Let's have a look. Hello, Tara. Can you hear us? Hello. What happened there? Can anyone hear us on the panel?
Yes, I can hear.
Ah, brilliant. No worries. Back. Sorry, Tara. Can you hear us now?
Tara's dropped off. I think there might be an issue with your thing reverbing as well.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, sorry. I don't know where. Sorry. It was just a breakdown of electronica. It was nothing major. But sorry, yeah, that's cool. That's thanks for getting right.
So I was doing my master's degree and I was asking some GPs their views on some policy, and all of the GPs did multiple things. And I said to them, do you consider yourself as like a business person? And they said, no. And they said, you not consider yourself like an entrepreneur because everybody did more than one thing.
Yeah.
And they said, no. And I thought, oh, it's really interesting. I worked at the university at the time. So I wrote down like the business of healthcare and thought, where can somebody like me learn about healthcare? Because I was working in the Faculty of Health in a university, but that's more on an education side. So one day I just thought, do you know what? I'm going to start a podcast because I couldn't find any information. And so I just thought I'll do about 10 episodes where I just interview people and then shared a little bit of kind of what I was learning. And now I think last week we published 290. episodes, 290th episode. So
wow, that's incredible.
The blog started as just a bit of a side hustle, you know, like I didn't overthink it. And one of these people, I'm like, I'll just try it.
So we
started the podcast 4 years ago, and then the blog was a bit of the same. It was like, where can I find information? Where are people like me? And I just was a little bit like, I was just sharing what I knew. Just sharing what I'd learned, sharing my mistakes. And yeah, I think this last year we hit over 100,000 views on the blog.
Wow, incredible.
Yeah, so what will I do? It feels quite niche, but just like you guys, you know, like you just start and then one person comes and two people come and I think the key is to keep going and not give up and not look at the numbers, because all of a sudden it's like, it's hardly any views, and then it's like bang, you know, like that compound effect really worked for us and catapulted us.
Yeah, and obviously your podcasts will be available 24 hours a day. You'll be able to get them, you know, you'll be able to put them on, I don't know, Spotify or Apple Music. You'll be able to listen to them on all sorts of platforms, and you can, even if you're driving, you can listen to one. You know, you can take it or leave it. You know, you can listen to it every day. You know, you can listen at the weekend, whenever you get time, if you so desire, that's a really good way of learning and getting to know stuff. You know what I mean?
Really,
that's incredible.
So yeah, that's what we do.
That's cool.
Sometimes feel like we're a media company, not a consultancy.
Oh, bless you. Yeah, I can understand that. Right. What does mental health mean to you, and what do you do for your mental health? I've seen on social media like you like exercise and you're an ultra marathoner. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, please?
Yeah, I think I just like a challenge. I would also tell people I don't look like a runner, but I'm just quite a determined person. Mm-hmm. So my husband ran marathons at the time, and I thought, I can't compete with that. We're quite competitive. So I literally did like Race for Life, and then I did 100K. trained for it.
Wow. And both and ends I just, of the spectrum, maybe, you know.
Yeah. And just
good for you.
And then just kind of got the bug for it. And then someone said to me, what are you going to do now? You're going to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. And I was a bit like, what's that? And then I did that. And yeah, I've traveled quite a bit. So I think mental health, I spend a lot of time, I think, on my mental health. I'm a big meditator.
Yeah, that's cool.
And I think with looking after Tali and all of the kids, it's, you know, being a parent is stressful at the best of times. And I think I've unintentionally created quite a stressful life because I run my own business. So with the kids, the business, the exercise is a way to decompress and just to...
Good medicine.
I can think better when I exercise. So yeah, it's always, but I used to be really, like, I was an overweight kid, really, really overweight. So yeah, it's just a way to manage, and I love food. So it's like a manage,
honest, that's a great way of, you know, keeping yourself healthy. You know, I admire you for that. That's really good.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Rich, for that fantastic start to tonight's diabetes chat. I'm back with Rich now. I've got our Sports Direct mugs equivalents, and we are ready to crack on with the next section. So let's have a look. So I'd like to talk a little bit about Talia's, obviously, journey with diabetes when she was diagnosed. So can you tell us a little bit about that, Tara? Like, I looked on your social media and it was Christmas Day, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's Christmas Day, I think 2017. So,
oh my goodness, that is like a memory that will always be there, won't it?
So Tia, my eldest, was unwell, and Tali was unwell. She was 5 at the time. So she'd had started wetting herself, which we thought, well, that's odd. But we just thought, oh, she's unwell, because Tia is unwell as well.
Yeah.
We're just a little bit like, something's up. And my middle daughter, Layla, has got a kidney condition. Mm-hmm. So, when you're just like, in hindsight, I can't believe I didn't act sooner. I feel terrible.
And did you know much about diabetes? Like,
I had no idea.
So you can't really blame yourself, can you? Because, like you say, you just think your children are just poorly. Just like my son's right now, he's not quite well, and Ella was poorly last week. You just think they're just poorly, isn't it?
She got admitted to DKA. So it was like, what do we do? Because it was Christmas Day or Christmas Eve, like, in the, you know, like, it was Christmas Eve at the time.
Yeah.
And then we're a bit like, what do we do? And then she went to the toilet, and then she came like back, and I can't describe it very well, but she kind of flopped on the sofa in a really strange way. Like, she didn't, you know, like, correct her body. Like, it looked uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I was like, we just need to go.
Yeah.
So we just need to call the ambulance. We phoned up the ambulance. They were like, we're coming. But it took ages. And then we were like, just about to bundle her into the car because her breathing really changed. Oh. And the ambulance came, literally just as I was about to put her in the car. And then they were like, what's happened, Mum? And I was like, she smells really funny and she's breathing really funny. And he just bent forward, smelt her breath, and said, I think she's diabetic.
Yeah, because he could smell the pear drop smell, the ketones, the high sugars.
Yeah, so she was really, really high. So then we got blue lighted.
She was five at this time. Wow.
She got blue lighted to the local hospital, and then we got blue lighted to the Evelina.
Yeah.
And then the Evelina was brilliant, 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 brilliant. We've been there with Layla, so it feels a bit like, not like home, but you kind of know what to expect. And then we came back to the local hospital, and I'll never forget it. It was like a green, I wish I still kept it. It was like the nurse threw down, it was like a big textbook, and I felt like it was called, like, Diabetes 101. And she said, Mum, read that, and then we'll test you to see if you can take Tali home.
Wow.
And I just was a bit like...
I bet it was so overwhelming, wasn't it?
Well, do you know what? At the time, I think I was like in work mode. I was like, okay, I had my bag with me. I had a highlighter. And literally, I think I had my pad with me, and I kind of wrote... I remember writing out, like, who, what, why, when, how. Yeah. Like, how much. Just like, what is it? What, you know, why? And just... And then, yeah, it was like a bit of, it was Layla's birthday, my middle daughter's birthday, on the 29th of December. And yeah, it was just, it was stressful.
Mm.
And, but also, I think because we've had a similar experience with Layla, Layla's got kidney disease, it was a little bit like, I don't know, you kind of just switch into just like a practical head, if that makes sense. I think I just was like work mode versus.
So what, what was it like then for you then? And obviously Talia, obviously she was five, so I guess she had some sort of understanding, I guess. As you do hear some children of diagnosed maybe two or younger. So I guess she had some sort of understanding, but also I guess it was very hard. You know what I mean? She's a 5 year old girl just starting school, getting into routine, maybe going to, I don't know, dance classes and things like that. And then she's obviously diagnosed with diabetes. But what was it like for her, but also for you as parents and also your family? Because like you said, you've got two other children as well. What was that time like for you guys? I guess it was challenging, I guess, in a way.
It was really, really stressful. I asked Harley, she doesn't remember not having diabetes. So she's just, it's like, she just always remembers having it. But it was really stressful and really, like, I remember, you know, you just, like, I was on, like, Facebook all of the time. You know, like, you're trying to find groups.
Sure.
But then in the end, that wasn't good for my mental health.
Yeah.
Because I did think, actually, in my experience, it was people like me going to those groups, you know, like in crisis, and that wasn't helpful to hear everybody else at the time. It wasn't helpful to hear other people's crisis because I was not in a, I wasn't, it was very stressful.
Sure.
But I'm married to Mark. We've been together for 24 years. And I think actually one of the best things that have come out of this, I mean, I'd like to think me and Mark had a good relationship anyway, but I feel that we're just so tight, like, I'm really, really lucky that we've got a really good like family unit. And I think when I'm down, Mark was like there and like vice versa. And the school, the primary school, honestly, I did a podcast and I will share it with you guys.
For sure.
The primary school was phenomenal. Phenomenal. Wow, they were so amazing.
So obviously she was diagnosed Christmas then. When did she go back to school?
Can't remember.
Few weeks later or something after.
Yeah. The school were just, they couldn't have done any more. They were so good. But at my diabetes team, I mean, this is another conversation. If the relationship is really bad. That was hard because I think that, and this is a bit unfair, but my relationship with the nephrologist in the Evelina is like so good. So I was expecting, not like they're my friends, but expecting it to be friendly.
Yeah, absolutely.
None of that, honestly. And I think what was really hard, actually, and it still is hard now, if Talia's levels are unstable, it's like, Mum, what are you doing? What have you not done? What have you done? Why is it done? Why have you done that? And I think with the pump, you know, like, not that you want to, but there's no hiding.
Yeah.
So sometimes I think the most stressful parts have been like when maybe Tali's eaten and she's not asked and she knows she's just taken it.
Yeah.
And then her levels go up really high, but we don't know. So that has been, when she was a bit younger, that was really stressful. She went through a period of doing that all of the time. And then, you know, like, we'd overcorrect and she'd come crashing down. So that was really hard. But I think, it's really hard to remember, but I think that we managed quite well. But there were definitely periods where I just cried. It was really, you've got other children, it's like, where do you, it's hard enough, but you know, like, I think Tali just eats up the attention, you know, the sickest child eats up the attention. So my eldest daughter that doesn't have a long-term condition, I think it was, you know, like making time for her.
Yeah. 100%.
And that's still the case now.
Still important to have time for them all.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
We do. We each take them for like a coffee date. We take them to Costa just by themselves.
Love it.
Brilliant. Just to make sure they have that time because I think the diabetes
so
is
important.
And going to the diabetes camp helped me realize how much we talk about it. Like, it's so consuming. And I didn't realize, like, the first thing I probably would say, and I'm not proud to say this, but like, if Tali would wake up, I'd think, what's your levels? And she'd come home from school and I'd be like, how was your day? And I think I was asking, how are your levels?
Yeah.
You know, like, not like, how was your day.
I've seen discussions on this, not necessarily on Diabetes Chat, but on different podcasts and different things. And whereas parents have said things like that, like they straight away walk through their water levels, or and they're not doing it in a bad way or anything. They're just obviously concerned. But I think you as parents learn that journey as well, isn't it? Like say, we're first and foremost human beings, and diabetes lives with us, and it's trying to understand that, I guess, and go in that journey. And like say, you've learned that, and that's absolutely fine. And what sort of things has Talia used then over the years in her diabetes journey to manage her levels? And obviously, you mentioned she's on hyper closed loop now, but what sort of things has she used previously in this time?
We've always been on Dexcom.
Yeah,
we went from pen injections to Dexcom, and we've just not changed. It's been really, really good for us. We paid for it initially. That's a lie, actually. We tried Libre, maybe for not even a month, and then someone said, kind of mentioned Dexcom, so we was like, oh, we'll just try that, and then we're with that, and we've had no
issues with that.
No issues. Sorry, Dexcom and Omnipod. We've only ever been with Omnipod, and then we had Dexcom.
So do you, and you may not want to disclose this, but do you have like the follow-up and things like that where you can see Talia's numbers and stuff, or is she at a stage now where she's more independent in herself, or what sort of level of care as a parent do you support Talia with her diabetes?
So I've got the follow app on, I've got like three devices and on my watch. And I think that I have been told off by the diabetes team that I'm too hands off, which is interesting. I think that, so that's been quite hard because I want to, I want to be there, but she's at secondary school and I just think she needs to learn. I know she's young, but I do have all the apps, but I think sometimes in the communications that I've had with the diabetes team, they reprimand me for not being better. So that's
what do you mean in that sense, in terms of being better? What do they expect from you, or what they saying in that sense?
So in regards to like counting carbs, so I will say, so we've got the Carbs and Count app, so I will go to, they'll say like, mum, tell me how you like sort dinner out. So I'll say, well, I'll make it, and then I'll put it on Tali's plate, and then I'll get Tali to, you know, like do the carbs and kind of oversee it. Sometimes I don't, I'll be honest. Sometimes I don't. Yeah. And they're like, well, no, you know, like, no.
So they expect you to tell her what she...
Yeah.
But I think it's a learning process for her, really. And I think that's where I would personally, and this is me talking, not diabetes, it's Tom, you know what I mean? I think you should, you know what I mean? You give her the resources and the tools and the support and nurturing and you do it together rather than, here's your plate of food, that's 50 grams, that's 5 units because your level, you're in target. You know, I think it's a bit of both. I think each parent, each person will have their own different perspective, and I think that's absolutely fine. But,
Can I just say, not like when she, you know, like I'm talking about even now, like Tali goes to secondary school.
Yeah.
So I would say, not obviously when she's like, I wasn't like, do it yourself when you're 5.
No, of course not. Of course not. No.
I did a presentation called Why I Don't Take My Daughter to Her Diabetes Appointments. My husband always takes her.
Yeah.
So I do find that hard. I think it's a condition like with Layla, where she's got kidney disease, she relapses. They would never say, because it's not more, you know, like it's her body. There's nothing from a lifestyle perspective we've done, but I think with diabetes, because it's so up and down, it sometimes feels like, what have you done? What have you not done?
And each day, each day is so different, isn't it? Even if you have the same meal every day and your levels are pretty much the same, but anything can happen, you know what I mean? There's so many factors that can influence your diabetes. From your sort of perspective as a parent and then supporting obviously your daughter with diabetes, what would you perceive as the most challenging aspect of managing diabetes on that sort of day-to-day basis?
Most challenging. I think it's just another, it's like an added layer of worry.
Yeah.
She's being sick. She's got really high temperature. And it's like, but you always have to think about the diabetes. So I think it's the consuming nature of it.
Yeah.
I find is the most, I just live with it now, but I think it's like, I'm probably always a little bit on edge. And like, if I'm at work and it, you know, like it goes off, like my watch beeps, then I'll like message her and be like, are you okay? Or, you know, like trying to work out, I'll be like, oh, you know, pre-bolus and things like that. So it's just something that's always on my mind.
Definitely.
Even when I'm not, and when I travel, I'm still like, I'll phone constant, my husband and be like, babe, you just check what Tali's doing. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's the constant thought, thinking about it.
So can I ask then, what sort of form of support do you have for you guys?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear us? Can you still hear us?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can. Can anyone else hear us? Claire? Mark?
Yeah, I can hear you.
No worries. We'll hopefully get Tara back on. But you guys can still hear us, so it's not our side, hopefully.
Yeah, I think you just dropped out briefly. Yeah.
Really, really interesting chat so far, isn't it?
Yeah.
I just think parents, carers do such a fabulous, they do so much for their loved ones, don't they? And it's, we're the people living with it, but they're pretty much living with it as well, aren't they? Claire, are you able to invite Tara back on as a host, speaker for us?
I have done.
Thank you.
I think she's just dropped off.
No worries, no worries. I just think it's so, so interesting and hopefully. Hello, Tara.
Hiya, I'm so sorry. I don't know what's happening.
Right. Cool, it's fine. No, absolutely no problem whatsoever.
It's like diabetes technology. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard what I was saying. Did you hear
No, I was basically saying, what do you do for your sort of support? Who do you reach out to in moments like you want to chat about something or you want to rant about something? Do you have a sort of network, a peer support network for you that you can offload to or get maybe some advice? Like, who do you talk to?
So I talked to my husband, Mark.
Yep.
There was a fantastic, I've forgotten her name. What was Adele?
Adele, from JDRF.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So
she's amazing.
When we went on to Hybrid Closed Loop, I thought, oh my God, this is like, it was like Christmas Day. A good Christmas Day. not diabetes Christmas Day.
I love that.
And after about a week, it was a nightmare. She came crashing down. She was having like diabetic seizures. So scary. The diabetes team just kept saying, you just need to wait. You just need to wait. And that was so stressful. So I don't know who I messaged. I think somehow I got in touch with JDRF. And then she said to me, speak to Adele.
Yep.
And I just cried for about half an hour. Adele just listened to me. And she was she was just amazing. She was so kind.
Yeah.
I've met a few other, I went to a Diabetes UK like research event and met some mums and don't think there was any dads there. I think I met some mums there. And that was really helpful. We exchanged numbers. And just picking up friends as I go along. I wouldn't say it's a huge network, but I think even things like this, like when I went to the diabetes conference, I think because you've got that diabetic connection, you're just connected, you know, like you're just, makes you feel like you're friends. So even if though I wouldn't say I've got lots of really close friends, I definitely.
Well, you've got someone, you've got people.
Yeah.
If you need to talk about things or ask questions.
Yeah.
Like for instance, me with my journey, diagnosed 17 years ago for 16 years of that, literally I was on my own. I didn't really talk about it, embrace it, felt isolated, alone. And you know what I mean? When you are on your own, you do feel them horrible things. And since doing diabetes chat and having people like Rich and the community, you know what I mean? You've got someone who understands and gets it. And if you send them a WhatsApp message at, I don't know, 2 a.m, they'll get back to you when they can, and it's just someone who's got you back. So let's move on to the next section, which I know is something that is close to your heart and something that I'm sure we'll have a great chat about, schools. And I know we talked a little bit about it when Talia obviously was diagnosed and she went back to school after Christmas. What sort of support did, let's talk about primary to start, and then we'll talk about the transition, right? What sort of support did the school do at this time when she was diagnosed? What did they do? Did they do any sort of plans in place or training for staff, assemblies? Did they raise awareness? How did they support you? What did they do in that time?
So the diabetes team gave them training, and there was loads of teachers got the training. Yes. We had our personalised care plan, which was kind of like one of the real. But the thing they did the most was just listen.
Yeah.
And they were just at the end of the phone. And I just felt like they really, really cared about her. There was one time Tali had a really bad low and he had to call the paramedics. Mm. And like half of the teachers were just watching her. And I was like, you can go now. And they're like, no. So they were just so caring, and whatever we wanted, which wasn't actually that much, but I just felt like there was nothing too much. So if there was like a trip,
yep.
And I think, you know, like you have the protocol, but yeah. I was like, but then you know yourself, or I feel like I know Tali. So I'd be able to say, even like if she was high, just, you know, like, let her just go and run around, you know, like she doesn't have to sit there, or
yep.
Give her 4 glucotabs or give her 5, you know, like they would listen to me. And that was, yeah, they were so, when Tali left that school, because all the kids had gone there, I cried. It's like, you know, open a secondary school. I just felt like I didn't worry about Tali when she was at school. And for part of that time, you know, like we didn't have the tech. And I just, yeah, they were just, she had a teaching assistant, you know, like always there. She's got great friends. I mean, I had a few friends with mum. So there's a couple of times where I'm like, you know, like you run out of supplies. I'm just like, has anybody got any needles? Has anybody got any insulin? Yeah. So yeah, I just never, it's just a really lovely, great, supportive environment. And I know lots of people that don't have that, but they didn't do much. And it goes to, you know, like when you think about care, you don't need to do a lot. No. You just need to listen.
And that's when we've talked on Diabetes Chat about things like when we go into to see our consultant appointments or whoever, like sometimes just to ask us, how are you today? What would you like to talk about? And then build it from there rather than maybe going into appointments and seeing your numbers straight away. Like, oh, what's this? And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it does speak volume by having someone who just asks how you are and listens and is there for you. And just does the simple things,
yeah,
amazingly. You know what I mean?
And yeah, 100%.
So, what was school like for Talia then? Primary school, like, how did she find it? Did she go into school and talk about her diabetes? Did she feel comfortable being in school, like going back into school? And how did things change for her? And was it hard for her, or did she kind of just take it in a stride, I guess?
She just took it in her stride. I think the most challenging parts for Tali, and I asked her this in preparation, is I think, is, you know, at meal times.
Mm.
So like if she's high,
yes,
then that's very frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you put out a question, and I put out, sometimes I break the rules. You know, like sometimes you do everything right. Remember, we were going to a show, I'm going to see Matilda, and I just like, she had like a no, you know, low carb breakfast. We did everything, you know, like perfectly.
Absolutely.
And I was like, she wanted to go to Five Guys, but she just wouldn't come. And she was high, and she wasn't coming down. And I kind of promised her, and I was like, do you know what? Let's just have it.
It's so disheartening. It's so disheartening when you're in those sort of situations.
So I think meal times when she's high were hard, but. I think sometimes she does say, she's like, she's happy to talk about it. But then because her friends still don't quite understand, they keep asking her. So I think she gets a little bit frustrated about that. Yeah. And I think that, yeah, you know, like she's a kid. So just, you know, when you know, it's frustrating sometimes, isn't it? You know, the levels aren't behaving. you got mum and dad saying, have you given yourself a correction? Just like, yes, I have. I think she just gets on with it. She really, really does. She has her days, but I feel like the diabetes camp has made me understand more about how she's feeling. And I feel like I'm a better parent. But yeah, school was great. And the transition from primary school, so everybody said to me, secondary school's like a completely different ball game.
Yeah.
They won't care. And I remember I hadn't really thought about it. I thought it would be very similar to primary school. I thought that the diabetes team would come, they would do training with the school. None of that. And I remember someone said, have you contacted the school? And I was like, no. So I contacted the school and I don't know why, but I was really nervous because I wanted, as a parent, obviously, you're really protective and you really want, I'm thinking I want the A-star care that
the primary school gave. Yeah.
But I didn't want to kind of go into, heavy-handed because I don't know.
You kind of expected they would do more than they did, I guess.
Yeah, initially. So, but I had the first meeting and it was a little bit like the SEN lady kind of said a few things and said, but when you're like, she was like, oh, we've got children with diabetes in the school.
Yeah.
Like, we know what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't say anything, but I did think that you don't know Tali.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So can you, just because like Polly's got it, it doesn't mean it's the same. So it was the first meeting was a little bit, it was okay. It wasn't great. And this is what I did a podcast about, my experience of personalized care planning. It was strange having to advocate for myself, even though I don't have a great relationship with the diabetes team, I was kind of expecting them to be there. So I had the first meeting. And I just learned so much, just asking questions, which I didn't do so much when looking around schools. We asked a few questions, but the SEN, the Senko lady, was helpful in kind of saying, well, the PE block is quite far away and this may happen. And, what would we do if we did lots of scenario planning. So that was really helpful. And then I did book a follow-up meeting. And it was strange. And I don't know why, but it felt like if I didn't kind of do what I did for my job, I think I would struggle. Like, I think that I've got a master's, I've got a business, I'm well educated, but it was really scary, like being on my own.
Yeah.
And going in there kind of saying, okay, well, this is the care plan that you get from the diabetes team. There were like 8 attachments. It was so long and kind of having to kind of say, I felt really bad. I kept apologizing, which was really interesting. I was a bit like, oh, I'm really sorry I'm giving you extra work. And then when I came out of the meeting, I just thought, why am I apologizing? Like,
not at all. Yeah.
This is like their job. So it's just a mixture of emotions, but I did find it really stressful. I found it really draining. And I was so nervous about Tali getting on the school bus. Like, what would she do? I kept thinking, what if she has a hypo on the bus?
Yeah.
By herself. Like, and nobody knows who she is. So we kind of did a phase like introduction, we took her to school. She was desperate to get on the bus. So like for the first 2 weeks we drove her and picked her up. And then like the third week we drove her to the bus. She got on the bus and we followed her on the bus. To school slowly. We still take to the bus stop because it's a bit of a walk and where it's so dark. That was really scary. And just nobody told, nobody was, I suppose I didn't have any friends that had done it.
Yeah.
And I think all I heard was negative. Like,
and how are things now since the meeting and stuff? Is there a proper procedure in place now and she knows what to do in scenarios of where her kit is or extra kit? Does she know the supplies? What to do if she's going low? Who to speak to? I guess all the teaching staff are aware and they know the symptoms, or especially her symptoms. You talked about when you went into that meeting and you said, oh, there are other children. Yeah, but it's my child, it's yes. her diabetes, and like Rich is sat literally next to me, his hypo signs symptoms may be completely different to mine.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's so important to recognize each individual, isn't it? And yeah. you can see people agreeing in the chat, and you can spot them sort of symptom signs. Ah, okay. So have things got better since you've obviously had the meetings and
yeah,
stuff?
So we've had 3 meetings since, and she's taken her third term.
Yep.
I would say I'm like 80% happy. Yep. I think the remaining 20% is that when we kind of did like an open day and we went round to all the teachers and showed us our classrooms and stuff, mm-hmm. and then a few teachers were a little bit, you know, like I think they hadn't done the training. Or they were just a bit, it felt like they were a little bit dismissive.
Yeah.
So I did kind of say, I did raise that as an issue. It's a bit like, this is a life-threatening condition. Can you do the training, please? But other than that, I must admit, it's the relationship that I've got with the school is really good. And I knew that that would be important. I don't want to be in a battle with the school. And the only reason why I say that is because that's kind of like the information it had fed to me. And I forgot what you call it. You know, is it an EC?
EHCP.
We don't have one of those, but I've heard lots of stories about trying to get them and the school not being supportive. So I think that I educated myself, and I'm really, really lucky that so far so good. But I did say to the school there'll be ups and downs.
Sure.
And so I just think, yeah, there'll be ups and downs. I'm sure things will happen where I think, well, what's happened here? But I'm just trying to be, you know, like just trying to be positive, and just trying to take each day as it comes. But she's got a really good group of friends. She's got brilliant. The independence,
but
to a degree, you know, like, there's been times where she's like, oh, can I go into Canter? Can I go into town? And it's like, no, not yet.
Yeah, yeah.
So she'll get there, though.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? She's on her journey. So what sort of resources have you used? Have you used any sort of resources like, I don't know, JDRF or DigiBeat? Have you found any of them useful? Or would you recommend any sort of particular ones to any parents listening or will listen back? And what would be your sort of top tips now to give some parents who are listening in that transition period from primary to secondary? What would you maybe advise them?
So resources wise, we love DigiBeat. Diabetes UK have got really good resources, and JDRF, but I'd say more DigiBeat because of the app. It's just on our phone. And I think my advice to mums, if your child is parents and carers, if your child is in like year 6, so one of the things that we did actually during the summer holidays, I like sent Tali on like secret missions or just missions. And like, you're going to walk down to my office now, which is probably about a 20-minute walk.
Yeah.
And then I'd be like, you know, fill your bag up with books.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then like another day, I was like, you know, put a really big heavy coat on, and it was quite hot, you know, like, cause some days you're going to be hot, some days you're going to be cold.
Yeah.
I'd send her to like Sainsbury's just around the corner, and she lost her phone. And I was a bit like, okay, what are you going to do? Because you're going to lose your phone, you're going to lose your stuff.
Yeah.
And so it was a bit like just trying a scenario plan. She went back and retraced her steps. So I would say, if you feel like your child can do these little things, like how can you start to kind of loosen, you know, like purse strings. So that was really, really helpful. So by the time she went to school, she was used to, you know, like, doing a little bit of walking with her stuff, making sure she's got her stuff on her. And I think a couple of times she'd walk down like halfway, realize she'd forgotten something and walk back. Yep. So that was really good. And just meet with the school, you know, they'll have their care plan, understand their policies, and just, I'd say, don't be frightened to express your wishes.
Yes.
Definitely not like it's your child. And I think just you want a good relationship with them, because it's key. They're there all, you know, like they're so much. So I would just say, yeah, try to build that relationship with them and just start getting ready so it's not so much of a shock to the system. And then I think I would just say, just expect it not to be, for me, it's not been too bad, but I don't expect it to be smooth. So my expectations I'm happy because, I just don't expect it to be perfect. And I think I definitely have empathy for the teachers because, you know, someone might, I was saying that somebody might be, you know, got somebody diabetic, somebody, parents may have just passed away. You've got some people that are autistic. Yeah. Some people, a variety, some people have got peanut allergies. They've got a wide variety of health conditions.
And I remember I remember being in class and I had a massive hypo on the way. And I remember walking to class in sixth form and I was like, I was already late to class. I was trying to find my hypo treatment. I couldn't find it. Went to class and it was like, I don't know, 20 minutes left. And thought, I can manage this and I can finish school and walk home, which is a 10-minute walk up a hill, half an hour. Yeah, I can get my stuff. And I remember being in class and if it weren't for the teacher who recognized what I was going through, and that was probably one of the worst hypos I've ever had. And I learned from that episode. You know what I mean? Like say, teachers, schools, they do have a lot to be thinking about. And with all them things that you mentioned, brilliant. I think that's fantastic advice, Tara.
Can I just say one more thing?
Go on.
I did create a one pager, which kind of, I'm looking at it now.
You'll have to send it to us.
Yeah, so it kind of just says about, it's called About Me. So it's like, my name is Talia. I've got type 1 diabetes, and said like a little bit about her, what it means to be high, what it means to be low.
Mm-hmm.
And it does say, I think it's changed now, but I did put, the average person with type 1 diabetes must make an extra 180 daily decisions to manage their conditions. This may affect her sleep, mood, her ability to retain information. All I ask is for your support, patience, and understanding.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So that's got a little picture, and then just on the back of it, it's actually a Diabetes UK 10 things school staff should know about type 1 diabetes. And I did that in preparation for the first meeting. And that's part of, that's in our school folder. So that's, I think that's great. A good tip too.
Brilliant. I absolutely love that.
Fabulous.
So what we'll do, our final section, we got just heading towards 5:30, so maybe 5-10 minutes left. And Rich can ask a couple more questions on stigma and advocacy work, and then we'll finish for the night. Thank you so much. Over to you, Rich.
Yeah, thanks, Tara, for that. That was really interesting. Really interesting. Thanks for sharing your journey with, you know, your beautiful daughter and a diabetes journey. This one's about peer support, advocacy questions, and mental health. What are your thoughts on stigmas that are attached to diabetes? I know years ago I got some nasty comments when I was 14. I don't really want to discuss them, but children can be quite hard and horrible and criticize you and call your names and all the rest of it. But maybe now things have changed. Have you got any sort of suggestions on what could be done about it and stuff like that?
I think the main stigma, I mean, I get it from adults, and it's always related to like sugar. So that's really frustrating. And I sometimes feel like people think, I don't think people should be like, oh my God, but they're very just dismissive. Like, oh, it's just diabetes. You know, like it's nothing. So I think those are the two, but it's like, oh, can she have this? Or she shouldn't be eating that. So there's always
How does that make you feel as a parent if you're out and someone says to you, oh, can she have that? Should she eat that? You know, how does that make you feel? How does that make Talia feel?
I think, you know, like if it's, I think it's the tone of voice.
Yeah.
So I think if it comes across as like, a genuine like, oh, can she have that, if they generally don't know, then I don't mind, because if they don't know. But I think sometimes, I mean, it was somebody, a guy on LinkedIn was like, she should be eating a healthy diet, and I just thought, I didn't even mention anything about it, there was just the assumption that she wouldn't be, and I just so I think I don't mind if it's coming for, if you're, you know, you don't know, I didn't know. But I wouldn't have known. So I don't mind too much. It does get a little bit frustrating. But yeah, I think when people are dismissive of it, when they don't think that it's serious, that, I mean, what long-term condition isn't serious? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So I think that is a little bit frustrating. It's like, this is a serious condition. It affects every minute of our life.
Yeah, absolutely. Thinking about things regularly, you know, the external decisions and, you know, what have you got to do? You know, you've got that many things to juggle around. What could be done to help change people's perspectives? You know, like an education program, you know, I don't know, within schools maybe, you know, like we used to do like first aid. And I mean, obviously we used to do RE when I was at school and first aid. And when you're doing the sports, could they sort of involve any like illnesses and talk about stuff and make it more of an open, make it more normalize it, if you like, you know, and share it, you know. I think that'd be a good way of moving forward.
I think, I mean, Tali's done like some stuff with DigiBeat. She's obviously done some stuff with you. I think that people living with the condition is just to speak about it more. And I think sometimes I feel bad speaking about it as a mum because I don't have type one. And sometimes I don't want to take the spotlight off Talia. But I think if I can share more about the condition, I think, you know, like I think the more people share, the better it will be. And I think from the school's perspective, I did think, and I think it's funding is an issue, but I know quite a lot of people that have got autism or lots of children that have got diabetes and autism. And I just think there are so many long-term conditions and they're all different, but I was having a good conversation with a mum that had a daughter that was autistic and we had so many things in common.
Yeah.
And I did think from a school's perspective, could they not do, you know, like, I don't know, can we not bring people together versus everybody, you know, like learning in silos? Because actually when they go into school, when they go out into work, they're going to meet people with, you know, like all different types of things.
Yeah.
So I just think more education, but trying to deliver it in not sitting down in a classroom all of the time, because that sometimes it doesn't always go in. And I just think, yeah, I think social media and going to conferences and just tweeting away and the stuff that Partha does, I think the more we talk about it from the variety of perspectives, I think the better.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes in the classroom, it's too focused on, so I don't know, maths or science or English or whatever.
Yeah. Well,
you know, Indy, my daughter, Indy used to go into, she was she went to an outdoor learning place, you know, like nursery, and it was a wonderful place. And they learned so much, and being stimulated by the outdoors, it stays with them. You know, it's not like classroom derived. It's like an outdoor learning space. You know, it was like a wonderful, you know, in the summer they were learning about all sorts, you know, and that might be an option about health. And
I guess where them camps have come in, Tara, and I hear people, things in America, and obviously Diabetes UK do camps, and I think they're so, and each different camps, like some where the child, person with diabetes go, or they might do family ones or sibling ones, or, you know what I mean? Maybe there's friends ones, who knows? But I think things like that help as well, isn't it?
100%, yeah. Having siblings go, I think, is really, really, I think them, and I don't know, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think it is important to, you know, like for people that have got the condition to come together. But also, I want to be part of some discussions because it affects me in a different sort of way. And then I can tell other people, and like the other girls can have an understanding. So that's the challenge. And we never want to take the spotlight off of Talia, but I think it's a family. It affects us all,
all
of the time in different ways.
Yes.
And ways and probably that I don't know in regards to the other two, my other two children.
And that's what we loved before, and we both nodded and looked at each other when you said about you make sure that you can have special time for your daughters in different ways, and you'll take
them
to coffee mornings each and things like that. I think that's great. All right, Rich, last couple of questions.
So you've got a strong passion in helping others in diabetes, sharing your story and obviously discussing stuff with even mums and dads, you know, parents with children with autism and stuff. Can you tell us a little bit about any diabetes advocacy work you've been part of to raise awareness for for the diabetes community?
Yeah, so I'm now sitting on the advisory board for Together Type 1, which is fantastic.
Wow, that's incredible, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm really enjoying that, and I went to their event last year in Manchester, and just learning more about the program. And it was called the Diabetes Professional Care Conference, and I did my talk on kind of my relationship with the diabetes team.
Yeah,
and just I've done a podcast about it, and just like to tweet about it and just share my experiences. Yeah, we've done some bits of DigiBeat. So anything that I can try to do to raise awareness, I will absolutely do.
Yeah, that's incredible. That's really good to hear. And finally, what are your hopes and aspirations for diabetes care and management for Talia, yourself as parents, and for others affected by diabetes?
Oh, God, that's a big question. I just think as long as we've got the community, and there's lots of different communities, I think we'll be absolutely fine. I think we've got the tech.
Yeah.
But I suppose, as you can see, I'm black. And I think that the making sure that people from all backgrounds have access, like to go to camp.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
wasn't really expensive, but I did, like with the hotel and travel, it's not cheap. And I think, without being rude, it's like really middle class. And I just thought, there'll be so many families that could benefit from this.
Yeah.
Like how does every family have the opportunity to get the support that they need? And sometimes it's hidden. It only takes one person to say, oh, did you know about this? And then you're on this conveyor belt, and then you're like, oh, there's this, there's that, there's this.
Yeah, it opens so opportunities up, doesn't it?
Yeah. So I think that if there's anything I can do to raise awareness, to say, look, guys, there's this opportunity, or, there's this event, or did you know about this information? Or I think that's really important, because I suppose like in my normal work, you've got the people that know, and then you've got the people that don't, they're on the edges.
Yeah.
And they're called hard to reach. But are they hard to reach? Or that, why do we think that? So I think is making sure that every family has the opportunity to get the support that they need, whether that's the tech, and not everybody wants that. But I think it's about having the choice and the options. Yeah. Yeah.
I think Partha's working hard on breaking down like walls, like underprivileged people, people that come from a, different background and stuff. I know when we went to the Sheffield Diabetes UK event, the doctor up there said, the northeast side of Sheffield, it's not the most affluent place. There's a lot of deprivation and such like, and some people that they don't go and see the doctor and get access to the technology or get the help with the diabetes clinics or the clinicians, and it's not really available to them because they're just basically scraping through, and it's heartbreaking to hear that sort of story from a doctor that's been in the industry for 40, 50 years, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He trained with Dr. Peacock, that used to be my consultant in the 80s, and he's close to retirement, but,
it's really heartbreaking, isn't it?
It is, yeah, absolutely. But right, so, thanks ever so... Oh, go on, carry on, sorry.
Oh, no, that all else I was going to say, yeah, so that would be my hope for the future.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
You know what I mean? No matter what, anything, we should all have a voice, and we should all be able to have access to things to help us manage our diabetes and care, no matter where we are in the country or who we are, what we are, whatever, what I mean? We should all be able to get it. And thank you so much for tonight's chat, Tara, for popping in and speaking to myself and Rich and the community. A few sort of messages coming through. Alison says, big hug to you, Tara. You are awesome. So much resonates as type one and the type mom myself. You girl will keep growing with confidence.
always learning Taiwan alongside as she lives her life. She knows she has you to support her.
I just think it's great.
Yeah. Lovely comment from Alison there.
But honestly, thank you so much for coming in today and chatting and sharing your story, your daughter's story, talking a little bit about your career and all the amazing stuff that you're doing to support people. Obviously, the advocacy work that Richard just touched upon. It was great talking about schools and the transitioning and talking about you, your perspective as a parent, yours and Mark's perspective. And that was really, really fascinating and interesting to hear. And I just thank you for coming along.
Oh, my pleasure. And yeah,
it's wonderful
thank
that
you.
You've taken part and joined in and shared so many stories. And oh, wow, your job sounds so interesting. It just, oh, it's incredible. Good luck for for your future and everything. It's just it's great to see that you've created something really special, and you're a driving force in, you know, in that sort of area, you know, to help going forward with all sorts of things. You know, I know DigiBeat and Diabetes UK and JDRF have open days where people can come and look at tech and all the rest of it. Tom and I have been to a few, and that's, you know, but same as you say, it's got to be open to all walks of life, you know, everyone, you know, up and down the country, Scotland, Ireland, Wales, England, and it's
our favourite field.
Yeah, thanks ever so much. Wonderful.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Tara.
Thanks, Tara. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Wow, guys.
That was incredible.
Interesting chat here tonight on Diabetes Chat. Thank you so much to Rich for co-hosting alongside me, my friend. Really, really interesting and fascinating, and good to hear a different perspective as a parent, because we do have quite a few sort of parents that follow Diabetes Chat, and it was just really fascinating to hear that tonight, wasn't it?